Hockey Insider Pierre McGuire. Brought to you by Ye Olde Orchard Pub. Five locations, with a sixth now open in Chattahoochee. And by Dagwood Sandwiches and Salads.
How you doing, Pierre?
Excellent, Mitch. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Well, we've touched on it a number of times. The Penguins, you know, one step forward, two steps back. Where's the offense? Where's the power play? It's the worst in the league. And Malkin talking about the grumbling and how players are mad at each other. And boy, did he ever back up his words last night, huh?
He backed his words up. I thought that the team as a whole really competed hard. Their power play finally got engaged. They're no longer 30th in the league based on the two power play goals last night. Biggest thing that happened after having a terrible first power play, they started to become a shooting power play rather than a passing power play. It worked really well for them. It created a ton of opportunities, but Malkin and Crosby led the way. And when those two guys are jumping the way they were last night, Pittsburgh's got a fighting chance every night. But if they're not jumping like that every night, they're not going to have much of a chance. That's the biggest key. Those two guys have to be on it virtually every night.
There's so much to talk about. We'll revisit something else that happened last night, and Carey Price back at practice for the first time. But late-breaking news this afternoon, and it is a tough blow for the New York Islanders, who are now faced with having to trade perhaps their best defenseman, 25-year-old Travis Hamonic, who apparently wants to go home back out west. How do you, as an organization, deal with the timing of this?
I think they'll be able to do it. There's a lot of leadership there with Kyle Okposo and Johnny Tavares, and I can tell you Clutterbuck, Martin, and Cizikas have a lot to say in terms of what goes on with that group. They're not devoid of leadership there. I was just talking to Barry Trotz, the great coach of the Washington Capitals, and we were talking about just exactly what you just brought up, because he's a Manitoba guy. He's from Dauphin, Manitoba, and Travis Hamonic is from St. Malo, Manitoba. So we were just talking about that. It's interesting you would ask me about it. It's not easy. I've known Travis a long time. I like him a lot. I like him as a player. I love him as a person. First time I really spent time around him was a World Junior in Saskatoon, and he had a fantastic World Junior. He and Marco Scandella were really the breakout players from that World Junior for Canada on defense, even though they lost in the gold medal game. They were both outstanding, really went on the radar screen for a lot of teams. I think they'll be okay in terms of moving him. I see a lot of good fits for him. I could see Edmonton being a fit. I could see Calgary being a fit. I could see Winnipeg being a fit. They got a huge Dustin Byfuglien question they're going to have to answer going forward. So I think there's a lot of, I could see Minnesota potentially being a fit, maybe Chicago. So I could see a lot of teams where there could be a fit for him. I really do. That would put him closer to where he wants to be near Manitoba.
Yeah, and again, for those who weren't with us in the previous 20 minutes or so, Travis Hamonic has asked the Islanders to trade him. Darren Dreger reporting it's for personal reasons. He loves the island. He loves the Islanders, but apparently he wants to go home for personal reasons. And there's a list of teams, and Pierre just, I think, rattled off the ones that make sense. But if you're Travis Snow, you need to have a young defenseman coming back, right?
Well, you do, and that's why I think some of the teams that I just mentioned, there's enough of a fit. The other thing, too, is that's why I brought it up with Winnipeg. I'll just use Winnipeg because it's a Manitoba-based team, obviously, and he's from St. Malo, Manitoba, and that's the area he wants to try to go to. They have a Byfuglien question. They do, because are they going to sign him or aren't they? And if they're not going to be able to get him signed, why prolong the agony now? And potentially the Islanders, who think they're a legitimate Stanley Cup contender, and they've done this before. Remember Thomas Vanek. For Matt Molson, they've done this before. They're not afraid. They're not afraid to try this stuff. I could see them being Winnipeg and Islanders potentially doing something. I could definitely see that. And there are some very good young pieces on that Winnipeg team that I think would be very appealing to the people on the island, especially when you consider, again, they think they're a legitimate contender, and they have to compete with the Rangers and the Canadiens, and that's not going to be easy with the roster they have right now.
And that's a team, Winnipeg, that is scuffling more than I think anybody would have thought one-fifth of the way through the schedule. They've now lost five in a row.
Well, first of all, this last bit of time has been spent in the Central Division, and that's a death march. It's just so brutally difficult to win games in that division. You go into Nashville, and then the next night you have to play in St. Louis. I mean, thanks for coming. And you just go through the whole thing. It's just not easy. Chicago's a tough place. Minnesota's a tough place. St. Louis is a tough place. Dallas is a tough place. I mean, that's the problem in the Central, and that's why Colorado they get on a little run. If they don't sustain it, they got no chance. That's the biggest problem. So, yeah, I would say you're right. And part of the problem, I think, in Winnipeg, Mitch, that everybody's picking on the goaltending. I don't think if you ask Paul Maurice that he'd tell you it's our goalie's fault. I think it's more about total team defense, and in particular, I think it's about chances off the rush and undisciplined play leading either to high-quality scoring chances for the opposition or bad penalties, because they're taking a ton of penalties again this year. They were the most penalized team in the league last year. They're taking a ton of penalties again this year.
Well, that's one of the offshoots of wanting to play a really heavy physical style, though, isn't it?
That's exactly. You know what? It's funny, because it's almost like you were listening to Barry Trotz and I talking. One of the things that I think they're really putting a focus on this year, the teams that are playing this heavy style, if your hits are not 100% legal and it's borderline on the side or from the back borderline, they're calling it. They are calling it. And he has a player on his team, Tom Wilson, who is a very physical, aggressive player, and he's had to almost kind of tone him down just because he needs him on the ice rather than in the box. And so he's kind of tried to show him how to play the right way in terms of so that he's not in the box. But I would agree with you. I think that's a very valid point. Yeah.
Tom Wilson's a battering ram on the ice.
Is he ever? You know what? I said to him, because we were sitting in our studio, I said, Troxy, if I were coaching, I would deploy that guy all the time. He goes, I wish I could, but the referees are on him all the time.
Winnipeg, they've been shorthanded more than any other team. It's a fact, 77 times. Up there as well, St. Louis, heavy style. Mm-hmm. Anaheim, heavy style, and Montreal's opponent tomorrow, Arizona.
Yeah, well, there you go. I mean, I'm glad you brought those stats up. I don't know them exactly, but I do study the trends, and that's trending out there, and that's why I was talking to Barry about it, especially because of Tom Wilson and the impact that he can have on games. And I think that, again, there's nothing wrong with it, because I do think that there's a term or a thing about safety in the league. And this is the other thing that came out of our conversation. I was talking to Jeff Blashill and Tony Granato, too, before I came on, the coaches for Detroit. Everybody around the league saying the same thing. This game has never been faster. Even from last year to this year, it's quicker. And because of that, players are, it's not so much going back and getting the puck, it's going back and getting the puck and knowing you're going to get rammed. And you're going to get rammed hard. So where some of these injuries are happening, and we all thought of Zach Parise and James Neal from last week, players are trying to avoid those hits at the last second because they are moving at such a high rate of speed. And instead of getting a player flush, you're getting them just almost on an angle, Rod. So that's where a lot of the injuries are happening that we're seeing. It's not so much full-on contact. It's almost brush contact. It's on the side, and it's getting the joints, whether it's the knee, the shoulder, the elbow, the wrist. So if it's square, shoulder to shoulder, chest to chest, you don't see as many injuries. But because players are trying to avoid these things and everything's happening so fast, that's where we're starting. At least that's what we came up with as guys that work in the league and are around the ice all the time. That's where we think it's happening, a lot of these injuries.
Right in front of you last night.
Trailing on Mata, who knocks it down and plays it across for Letang. And right in front of the Minnesota bench, Olli Mata taking down the closer with Zucker. The centering pass for Crosby. That's turned away by Dubnyk.
Oh, boy.
And Olli Mata in distress in front of the Minnesota bench.
Gord, I don't think anybody likes this. There's Olli being helped up by Pascal Dupuis and Sidney Crosby, along with the medical staff.
Pierre, I was watching that live at the moment. I could hear, sitting on my sofa, somebody on the Pittsburgh bench yell, "Are you effing crazy?" At Niederreiter.
I won't tell you who the player was, but I can tell you that he's a veteran player, and that is about as vocal as I've ever heard him. And it's a very good player. Who doesn't really talk a lot, but he was irate.
And I don't
blame him, by the way.
Okay, what was scary is you know, we saw him helped off, but you came back, I think, at the end of the period and described what sounded like a really serious injury. Do we have any kind of update?
No, and my update came from is I was actually walking into our studio to watch the tapes again from different angles, and David Morehouse, who's a friend of mine, is the CEO and the president of the Penguins. He was waiting for me because he wanted to let me know, because we were on a national TV show, that he had just been in the dressing room with Mata and the doctors, and that he was already put on a gurney, was on his way to the hospital. Now, this is a young man that's had major shoulder issues. He's had major concussion issues going back when he played in the World Junior for Finland, and he's also battled through thyroid cancer. I mean, this has been an amazingly bad piece of luck for this man over time in terms of injuries and health. And first of all, I like him a lot because of the way he plays and the way he carries himself. But secondly, I didn't like that hit at all. I don't think anybody in hockey likes that kind of a hit. That was a bad play by Nino Niederreiter, very bad play.
Now, he couldn't have anticipated the door being open, but no, are you surprised
at
the
NHL? I'm not blaming him for that. Nobody's blaming him for that. That was a bad piece of luck. That was Darcy Kuemper, the backup goalie, trying to help out his team because they were going for a change. So you can't. That was the period of the long change. So you can understand that that's the backup goalie trying to help. That's the bad luck part of the whole thing. But I can tell you there was some concern, and I don't have any reports today, and I don't think anything's come out of Pittsburgh. There was some concern. There was some internal organ damage, but I have not heard that. That's what was proposed to me last night, but I have not heard that officially.
Yeah, actually, he's been cleared of the internal injuries.
Okay. Oh. That's good to know.
He's considered right now week-to-week with soft tissue and muscle damage.
Well, I'm just telling you, David Morehouse is not an emotional guy. He's a political operative. He used to work for Bill Clinton. I mean, he's a very plugged-in political guy. And he's calm, cool, and collected and very focused. I've spent a lot of times in different meeting rooms with him, so I kind of know him pretty well. He was in rough shape when he was telling me, in a good way. He cared about his player. And they were very concerned last night with Ole because he didn't go down the Pittsburgh Penguin runway. He went down the Minnesota Wild runway, which is right straight into, if you've ever been in the Console Energy Center in Pittsburgh, you go down the visitors' team hallway, and that leads right to the medical room. In Pittsburgh, if you go down the Penguins hallway, it leads right to their locker room. It's two totally different places. It's really unlike what you have in Montreal, where you go down the Canes hallway and go right into the medical room. In Pittsburgh, that's not the way it is. You have to go down the visitor's hallway to get to the medical room.
On the ice in Brossard today.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's all about trying to get your timing back at this point and trying to get back into, say, game shape. Probably had more Twitter time than I'd like, but you know, it's always difficult when you're sitting there watching your teammates. You're part of the team, you're in and around the guys, but you never really feel like you're a part of anything. It's really, really nice to get back with the guys and start feeling like a part of the process.
So Carey Price back practicing for the first time after spending 3 weeks, I guess, on Twitter a lot. Based on your knowledge and experience, the fact that this was his first practice in 3 weeks, he's not ready to play, but how long do you think it will be before he is ready to play?
3 to 5 days. Depends on the workouts he's able to do, but I'd say 3 to 5 days. The thing that's interesting, I love that soundbite. I don't know who got that for you, but you know what's great about it? It resonates with me because I watched him last week in Pittsburgh, and he was by himself when the players were on the ice practicing at the morning skate. He was by himself riding the bike. And he was, and I went over to say hello to him just to keep him company. And we had a nice little chat while he was winded. So I kept talking to him, so he'd get more and more winded. He was laughing. And then at night, when the players came back to play the game, he waited till the players went out on the ice to play. And then I came back in between periods, and there he was working out again by himself. He nailed that. That's the lonely existence of a player. Whether you're a star or a journeyman, when you're hurt from a team, it's almost like you're not part of the team. And it was great to hear that soundbite because it's a very real soundbite. It's part of what makes being an injured player in the NHL so difficult is you're almost divorced from everything that you think is so great being part of a team.
Also today, Michel Therrien and Torrey Mitchell.
He's really dynamic. He's got a lot of speed. This is a guy who's got a lot of respect from his teammates because he's doing a lot of the right thing. So we try to find a solution. I sat down with him this morning, explain our vision, and with his experience, with the way that he's playing the game, we hope that it's going to help Galchenyuk and Heller.
There's not too much of an adjustment, to be honest with you. I'm sure I'm still going to be taking some face-offs, and I'll end up the low guy in the D-zone sometimes as well. So a lot of times, wingers and centers are sort of interchangeable on the ice, and I mean, that's one of the good things that we're going to be able to do, I think, you know, based on positioning, guys can stay where they are.
Once again, Pierre McGuire in Detroit. How do you see Torrey Mitchell in the short term or longer alongside Galchenyuk and Eller?
going to help him a ton because his speed's going to open up a lot of things. He's going to be very dynamic on the forecheck. I like the description Michel Therrien used. He is dynamic because of his speed. Going back to watching him play, now I know I'm dating myself. His dad, Steve's probably listening, but watching him play at Hotchkiss or watching him play at the University of Vermont, watching him play as a kid in San Jose, breaking into the league. I mean, those are the things that always stood out about him. Awareness on the forecheck and speed and pace for the neutral zone. And I love what he just said. Forwards and centermen and wingers can be interchangeable with down-low coverage. We used to do that a lot in Pittsburgh with Bobby Airy and Mario Lemieux. And the reason why is we knew Mario could intimidate the other team's defense. And Bobby was so quick and mobile and agile, a lot like Torrey Mitchell, virtually the same size and virtually the same skating style, now that I think about it. And so that would back defenses off. If you do that to insulate Galchenyuk, and maybe have Torrey do a little bit more of the heavy lifting down low and start a lot of the turnover situations in the counterattack, that could really help Montreal. But I know I told you this. When they got Mitchell and Flynn last year, that was highway robbery when they got those guys from Buffalo.
Right.
Yeah, leadership being a big part of that factor, Pierre. So the Canadiens showed everyone and showed themselves that they could win without Carey Price for at least 3 weeks. How about for Carey watching this happen? You kind of alluded to it a moment ago. Could it also help Carey psychologically, knowing that this team can now help their goalie out? They've got an offense. They've got a power play that works. Can that give Carey, when he comes back, a bit of a psychological break?
Oh, I think so. I think when you get a chance to watch a lot, it can help you in a lot of different ways. One of the things I think he's really aware of is he's got a real good running mate in Michael Condon. And Michael knows his role with the team, and Carey knows his role with the team, and I think that helps a lot for both players. But I was asked today on Ottawa Radio about Dallas and about Montreal and about the Rangers, and if they're for real or are they pretenders. And I think all three of those teams are for real. And I think you can also add Washington into that mix in terms of teams that are for real, that have a legitimate chance to play for the Cup. I think we're going to have more teams that are legitimate contenders for the Cup this year than we've had in a long time. And part of why Montreal is so effective is their four-line depth, their speed, moving Galchenyuk to center, the ability of Subban and Markov to dictate the terms of the game with pace, keeping Jeff Petrie last offseason. But the most important thing is their depth and goal. Their depth and goal is really good.
Pierre, Alexi Yemelin is going to be out for the next three games, and the Canadiens have allowed three goals on their penalty kill in the last three games. I'm just wondering if you think they're going to start to feel his absence in this next stretch.
They may. I wouldn't overreact to small sample size, but I like the point, Mitch Cowell, I really do. But it's going to be interesting what they're going to decide to do in terms of enhanced penalty kill. We saw Tom Gilbert get exposed the other night, and it's not something that I think Tommy wants to be doing. Tommy's a really good puck mover. He made a great play at Eller on a game-changing or very important play in the game when he moved the puck in the stretch pass for the shorthanded goal, but he also got exposed earlier in the game on a shorthand situation just because he wasn't paying attention to his area. But it'll be interesting to see what they do without Alexi in terms of where they are in the penalty kill. I'm really looking forward to seeing what adjustments they make.
So apparently with Yemelin, it's either an upper body injury or a lower body injury. We
don't try to guess.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course the teams that the Canes will be playing once he returns will have no idea that he has been injured either upper or lower. Let me get, before we finish up where you are, another game I watched a lot of last night. It was like watching Shinny in Boston.
We all know this isn't good enough. We all know that we need to be better. I think, we have to take the responsibility of having to be better, and so there's no excuse for tonight.
Pierre, that was Claude Julien after he cooled off a little bit. He does this live interview on Nesson right after, and then he goes to the podium. He was really angry last night.
Two things about Boston. Dougie Hamilton is not there anymore, and Johnny Boychuk is not there anymore. They missed the playoffs last year, and they didn't have Boychuk. They're going to be life and death to make the playoffs this year, and they don't have Hamilton, and they don't have Boychuk, and Chara's getting older, and Seidenberg is still just starting to feel his way through after terrible injury situations. They have issues on the back end, and that's why it looks like Shinny. Remember how you used to play the Bruins? Everything was structured and stable and hard to penetrate. Remember that, Mitch?
Oh, and you paid the price. You paid the price going to the net. You paid the price in the slot. Yep.
Well, I don't think it's like that anymore. I don't. Colin Miller's not that kind of a defender. Torrey Krug is not that kind of a defender. Chara still is, but again, he's not getting any younger. We talked about this. Adam McQuaid is the one guy that's got some serious fiber and jam on the back end there. Everybody knows that. But that's, I look at it, I was shocked. Last year, I was in Boston to do a feature on the Bruins the day after Boychuk was traded. I was shocked at how big a voice and how respected he was in their dressing room after that day that I did the interviews with the players. I was absolutely stunned. I knew he was popular, I knew he was good, but I did not know he had that kind of an effect on him. Dougie Hamilton's a really good player. You lose those two guys, I mean, that's a lot. Then you compound that, you lose Sean Thornton, you lose Gregory Campbell, you lose Danny Pyatt, Chris Kelly is injured and out maybe for the rest of his career. Start doing the math. Those are hard players to replace. Really hard players to replace.
All right, so let me finish where you are. Really good East matchup tonight. Detroit playing host to Washington. How fitting would it be? I know the Red Wings don't want to see it, but how fitting would it be that Alex Ovechkin becomes the highest scoring Russian player in history in the city where Sergei Fedorov starred?
I think the guys like Igor Larionov and Slava Fetisov and obviously Fedorov, I think they'd have a lot of respect for it. I think they would admire the accomplishment. Alex has obviously become an amazing hockey story. He has been for a very long time, but he's revered around the world just because of his style and his size and his speed and his strength and his ability to overcome so much in terms of being challenged physically and still pile drive people. So I think it'd be a huge thing, especially against an original 16 that really, I think, was one of the most brilliant teams in the 1990s in terms of playing creative hockey, led by Scotty, obviously, in the Russian Five, and just how dynamic they were. So I think it'd be a huge accomplishment to do it here in Detroit. I don't think the fans would be happy. I don't think the Red Wings would be happy. But I have to tell you, I think it'd be a huge thing for hockey, and I think it'd be great for Russian hockey in particular.
Montreal will be able to see the game tonight. Washington and Detroit. Enjoy, Pierre. It sounds like it could be a real good one, and we'll talk about it tomorrow.
Thanks a lot, Mitch. So you know, the last time Washington was here, November 10th, they lost 1-0. Ovechkin had 15 shots on net.
Yeah.
So it should be a real good one tonight.